game down there, maybe we'll get this thing going.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. And Jesus, Snowmageddon number 15 for this winter. So thanks for making the trek up here, Trish Coughlin.
Hey, everybody.
And Sam Stepanenko, who lives only a few blocks away.
Well, I still drove, and I'm hoping I don't get stuck trying to get out of the parking spot I got into. So
okay.
Yeah, because that snow is pretty sloppy.
Yeah.
It is. I was on the bus, and there's a couple times where the bus is like...
We went out this morning to buy Val a new computer this morning, and I'm like, holy shit, I'm not sure I want to be on these roads. But we were already halfway there. It's like, well, fuck it, let's just go get it done and be done with it. And now the new computer doesn't work, so I'm really mad.
Oh, no.
Yeah, got it all set up, and it won't go to the desktop.
That's what awesome.
That? Yeah, so yeah, it may be going back. I'm going to try and fix it. I didn't have time to mess
around. Maybe going back. It should be going back.
Well, it could be just something I did. It might be an easy fix. If it's an easy fix, I'm not going to worry about it. I have to do the research to see if it is an easy fix or not.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm sorry. When you get a new computer, you shouldn't have to research how to make it work.
That's right.
It should just work.
Yeah, you're like, oh, is here a button? You turn it on. Oh, cool.
Yeah, you shouldn't have to go on your iPad to fix the computer that you just bought, in which case, why did I buy the computer? Because the iPad's doing it for me.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, no. Irony.
Yeah, and so, yeah, there's a very likely chance to be going back and get swapped out for a different one. Because, I mean, like anything, there's always going to be the odd defective one. Just my fucking luck that I get the defective one.
Yeah. There's one. It just happens.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. On Snowmageddon.
On Snowmageddon, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Come on.
But, yeah, I had to get a new one because the old one just keeps crashing. So.
Yeah.
That sucks.
Yeah. And considering how much time she spends on it.
Fair.
Yeah. It's a computer talk with
that's right. The secret to a happy marriage: keep your wife on the computer.
Yeah, exactly.
And make sure that computer works.
Just gonna let you guys in a little secret: ladies love computers, guys.
So they can talk to other guys.
No, I like my computer.
Okay, there you go.
You can create things like our.
Is
photos.
Is it the size of the hard drive that gets you? Got you going?
No, you got to get a good amount of RAM.
Nicely done. Nicely done.
If RAM ain't doing its job, you got nothing.
It's almost like we rehearsed that, but we didn't.
Nope. Spontaneity.
Exactly.
Improv.
This is why we're friends.
So today I thought I'd switch things up, and I went with Rollerball. Rollerball from 1975, and then it's less than stellar remake from 2002. Rollerball was based on a short story by William Harrison, who also adapted it for the screen, and somehow they've got the director of Fiddler on the Roof, Jesus Christ Superstar, In the Heat of Night, and the Thomas Crown Affair, and Moonstruck, Norman freaking Jewison, to do this thing. Yeah. And I think he overestimated the importance of the material.
Yeah. A little bit.
He was trying to make 2001 A Space Odyssey with, like, roller derby.
Yeah. It was a movie with an identity crisis. It was, like, two stories in one that...
Yeah.
Didn't mesh very well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and almost a catalog of weird architecture.
Yes.
Yeah. But I mean, he talked about how, like, Stanley Kubrick was like an influence on him when he was doing this, and you can totally see that.
You can see it, especially that laser gun scene. What the fuck was that?
Oh, I don't know. Well, I think it was just the recklessness of the elite.
Yeah, and that's what I'm sure it was. And I mean, I suppose it did convey it, but...
And I think where it was in the movie, I think what he was trying to do, where it was the contrast between the conversation that John was having with the quote-unquote executive, where it was about, like, the executive can do whatever he wants, and John's just trying to fight back, and, like, these poor trees are just dying.
And that's exactly it. Yeah. And it's happening on this dude's property, so you'd think he'd be a little upset about his giant trees getting blowed up. But.
Exactly. trees take a while to grow.
A long while to grow. Speaking of that, do we want to talk about the cast? Because the cast is freaking amazing.
Of course I want to talk about the cast. They got James Caan, you know, Godfather, Misery. John Houseman from The Fog. You know, I like John Houseman when he's sitting reading a book and being all smarmy and British. But generally, I don't like him as an actor. He's really stiff.
We need to introduce you to the TV show The Paper Chase.
I was just about to say the same thing.
Okay.
That's how I became familiar with him. I didn't know about him before that.
Maude Adams gets third billing, despite not really appearing until near the end of the film. But she plays the wife of James Caan, Ella, and you might better know her as two-time Bond girl.
Yep.
Octopussy and Man with the Golden Gun. And actually, she made a small cameo appearance in A View to a Kill. So,
nice.
2.5? 2.2? 2.5? Cameo is not a 0.5.
She wasn't officially a Bond girl. Okay, no. 2.2, yeah.
Yeah, 2. Yeah. I'm going to give that a 2.1.
I don't know, considering 2.1. how much time some Bond girls spend in films, I'll give it a 5.5.
Yeah.
Like, think of Goldfinger, that poor girl. She's technically a Bond girl, but she didn't last long.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, basically the opening scene.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you always remember, you got painted gold. John Beck was Moon Pie. The dude with the coolest name I have ever heard in Hollywood, ever, Moses Gunn. I would watch movies about a guy called Moses Gunn. I would read books about a guy called Moses Gunn. Like, he's like, I could see, like, just part-time he's an actor, but the rest of the time he's a hard-boiled detective.
Oh, exactly.
Out to get revenge.
Moses yeah, Gunn. Really, you're right.
Moses Gunn.
Or like a bounty hunter in a post-apocalyptic world, Moses Gunn.
Right?
Yeah.
It is the best multi-purpose action film name.
Yeah. So, like, you get a guy named Moses Gunn, and then you name him Cletus. It just feels like a step down, doesn't it? I would just keep bringing him in and like, no, you're Moses. But that's not how it says it. Your name's way cooler than what we came up with. Cletus.
I don't know. Maybe Cletus was a better name then.
And Moses was in Heartbreak Ridge and Shaft, so he's got a good pedigree. Pamela Hensley was Mackie, and a lot of our older listeners may have grown up watching her on Buck Rogers and the $6 Million Man. I know
that's
one of those people.
Thank you. That was bugging me.
It took a little bit for it to click in. I'm like, oh, that big toothy grin. I know that somewhere.
Right.
Also starred Barbara Trenton, John Normington, Shane Rimmer, and Burt Kwok in smaller parts. And yeah, this movie, I never did find a budget on this thing, but it grossed about $30 million in the U.S. and
1975. That's pretty good.
That's pretty good. That's really good. Yeah. A whole lot better than the remake, which was budgeted at $70 million and only made just under 19 domestically.
Too much.
Yeah. The original film, by the way, on IMDb is 6.6 out of 10, 66% on Rotten Tomatoes with a 61% audience score. So, fairly consistent across the board as a better than average, but not great film. And it's also consistent for the 2002 Rollerball remake by John McTiernan, who did action greats like Die Hard, Predator, the remake of The Thomas Crown Affair, which was a Norman Jewison film. So we may talk about that in the near future. Last Action Hero was also on there, which divided audiences at the time. And the IMDb rating for that was a whopping 3 out of 10. And the Rotten Tomatoes score is 3%, and the audience score was a slightly better 14%. So, universally, nobody really liked it, which is kind of odd because the original screenplay was by Larry Ferguson, who wrote Hunt for Red October, Highlander, Beverly Hills Cop 2, and Alien 3. Okay, well, Alien 3.
Yeah.
But things change. And also co-written with John Pogue, who made a career of writing The Skulls. Mm-hmm. 1, 2, and 3, U.S. Marshals, The Quiet Ones, and Ghost Ship, which we might talk about sometime in the future.
Cause, we need to.
Yeah, we should. The original script pretty much was tossed out the window because John McTiernan wanted mm-hmm. to concentrate more on the violence and nudity in the film, which eventually got cut too because it was an hard R rated movie that they eventually cut down by almost half an hour to make a PG-13 movie.
Yeah, and I think they've inputted some stuff where it was like kind of sweat and not so much blood splurting all over the place.
Yeah, well, there's a scene where Rebecca Roman is
topless
working out because as you do. But
yeah,
it was actually that was actually a sex liaison, but the shadow was put in afterwards to bring it back down to a PG-13.
Which I couldn't really understand. Like, I'm looking at the shadow, I'm like, no, you can basically see their boobs. They can't, like, it's hiding nothing.
Oh, it's hiding the nip.
Yeah, but, like, I'm sorry, I have boobs.
Well, yes, we all know what we're looking at.
Yes.
It's true, but it's like, it always confused me how the nipple is, like, really just the line.
It's also not the only terrible digital shadow we will see in this movie.
Oh, God, yeah.
It's not the only terrible we'll see in this movie.
Yeah.
No, not by a long shot. This movie stars Chris Klein, Jean Renault, LL Cool J, Rebecca Romijn, Naveen Andrews, really fresh-faced Naveen Andrews, pre-Lost, I guess, Oleg Taktarov, David Heblin, and Janet Wright, and a couple interesting cameos in the movie. Paul Heyman was, if you know your WWE, he was the English announcer for Rollerball.
Possibly the best part of the movie.
And another wrestler was in there, Scott Taylor, better known as Scotty Too Hotty, is one of Petrovich's bodyguards, Jean Renault's bodyguards.
Okay.
And Shane McMahon's also in there, another WWE luminary. There's also Pink Oddly singing Rob Zombie.
Yes. I loved that, by the way.
And a recorded Slipknot concert that they inserted into the movie but wasn't actually recorded for the movie.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of cutting corners in this. I'm like, where did your $70 million go? Granted that the actual arena was pretty cool.
And a lot of it with just videos of Pink showed up a lot.
Yeah, there's like a lot of her on monitors. And I liked it being a big fan of Pink. So
yeah. Oh, yeah, I love Pink, but I'm like, oh, sweetie, why are you here?
Because she didn't know what it was going to turn out to be. That's the problem with so many of these actors end up in these crappy movies because they have no idea what's going to happen after they're done shooting it.
LL Cool J, when he was running around promoting the movie, he's like, I got to contractually obligated to promote the movie, but it's kind of ass.
Yeah. Well, what I found universally when I was sort of reading about this is when you're talking about that first original script, everybody loved it and it solved like a lot of the problems of the first film and it filled in a lot of other stuff. And there's like, it kept the themes that were the point of the first movie.
If they're going to remake,
I wanted to find it.
I hear that original script is excellent, and McTiernan just ignored it. And yeah, I think if they're going to remake this again, they should do that because there is some thought-provoking themes in there. Although I think the mystery is actually handled a little bit better in this one in the remake. Maybe because it's simpler, it makes more sense.
Yes.
They're trying to make this big government conspiracy with this sport that doesn't make a lot of sense.
It doesn't make a sense in either movie, really.
No.
Well, it does.
At least it feels more financially driven.
Oh, I meant the game itself. Yeah. Sorry.
Oh, I love the game. I would watch the shit out of that show.
Yeah.
I was very confused. Sense,
but it certainly is entertaining.
Less people dying would be great, but I'd still watch it. I think it would be a great... I mean, it actually inspired a show. Do you guys remember Roller Jam?
Vaguely.
It was just... It ran 1999 to about 2001, so it ended about a year before the remake came out.
Oh, wow.
So they probably did make that in response to the short-lived popularity of it. So they used to run it back-to-back with WWE, I think, Raw, Monday Night Raw, I think, because that was a while ago. at least that's here in Canada, that's how I saw it. So I really kind of got into it, and they were, it was sports entertainment, but they didn't have the, like, a ball to throw into targets or whatever.
It was like roller derby.
Yeah, it was a little more traditional roller derby. They were just had fantastic characters and whatnot.
Which in roller derby itself, you do have these women have these personas and these nicknames. Yeah. And I love that.
And they were mixed teams too. There was male and female. So
much like
I did like that update. It was interesting because I'm like going, like, why can't you put women on the motorbikes? It makes perfect sense.
Sure.
And other women, like, because you're just really trying to get the ball in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I that was a nice update. I mean, there are things to like about the remake that were just really poorly handled. Right?
Yeah,
right. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love the new arena.
Oh, the new arena was great.
It made it added.
I like the original arena too, but the figure eight configuration, which is kind of a nod to the team logo in the first movie. Yeah. I don't know if that was intentional or not. It just looked really cool.
Yeah,
they had little tunnels and stuff you can go through.
Yeah, and ramps and stuff like that. Yeah. And it was done on inline skates instead of roller skates. But
yeah, although the gutter, I kind of missed the gutter rule. They actually had rules for it, and it's funny because they would actually play the sport on their off time
in between
because it's a working arena, working set, so they would actually play the sport. But yeah, if the ball wasn't scooped or was lost and went into the gutter, like in bowling, it's a dead ball. They did took a little less time to tell you the rules.
They didn't. I mean, there's a whole bunch of rules in here in Russian that I can't understand. So, right? I mean, they acknowledged the rules without trying to explain the game.
And they had bits too where they're like, okay, he's got to come around this many times, and he's got to go through the rabbit holes first to get there. But then at one point, I'm like, he's only gone through the one tunnel. How in the hell did he score? I get really irritated. I'm like, I know it might be cutting, but it pisses me off. At least put that in there. At least make it.
Yeah.
If you have rules,
well, they explain
make it
the
look
rules,
like the rules
so,
happen.
Yeah, they should at least the first time. Once you've done it
once,
then it's established, and then you can start cutting around it. Yeah,
exactly. That's all you need to do. It would have been a simple fix.
Yeah. I agree with that.
Yeah, and I do too. Because I remember watching it. I did watch this movie a few months ago out of sheer boredom. It was something to be background noise, and because I do love the rollerball scenes in the remake. The first one where they show it, I love the pacing of the game.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun to watch.
I like the motorcycles jumping within the whole thing. Yeah, that excited me a little bit more.
There's so much happening on screen in that. So there's not everything about this movie is bad, as I said, right?
No. Well, let's actually run the trailer for the first one. We'll talk a little bit more about the first one, and we'll get into all the problems of the remake. Mm-hmm. And this could possibly one of be the worst remakes I've seen in quite some time. But that said, Hollywood's often proven me wrong.
Well, I'm going to say that this is my current champion for worst remake.
Okay.
In the not-too-distant future, wars will no longer exist, but there will be rollerball. Imagine a world without nations.
A few of us making decisions on a global basis.
Controlled by corporations.
No sickness, no needs, and many luxuries.
A society that has abolished love and hate, aggression and individuality. And replaced them with the most fantastic entertainment of all time. Televised to 2 billion hypnotized viewers. It is more than a game. It is Rollerball. James Caan, John Houseman, Rollerball. Rated R.
Rated R. Mm-hmm. I wish the remake had been.
I think it would have been a better movie if they'd allowed for that R rating.
Oh, if nothing else, we would have got to laugh at the over-the-top violence of it all.
For sure. And you know why they tried so hard for the PG-13 rating? Because of Chris fucking Klein. Because he was a hot actor from the American Pie movies, which were R-rated movies. But they were trying to push him as sort of a teen sex symbol, and they needed that audience to go to this movie.
I think
that had a lot to do with it.
That worked out, didn't it? Because he's made hit after hit after. Oh, wait, where is he?
Exactly. Like I said, I said trying. I didn't say they were successful.
I'd say American Pie made the best use of, well, just sort of the blankness that is his face.
Yes.
Like, there's a point in the movie, I remember it distinctly, where he, like, looks slyly at something. And I know the direction was like, okay, you see something suspicious and you're just putting it back in your brain. When I look at that, I'm like, yeah, but it's sort of like I can see in his head, okay, the director has told me I've seen something amazing and I'm locking it back in my brain. Like, I can't believe that he's thinking.
Not a good actor. He has to play the dumb jock in order to be believable.
Yeah, I'm not sure who thought, like, hey, you know who would make a perfect James Caan?
Yeah. I mean, and I think part of it too is he's big. He's a big guy. Like he does have size to him.
I mean, for being a sports character, he does kind of fit the bill, but he doesn't have a lot of depth in his range.
No.
James Caan certainly does. He's very believable in the part. Jewison makes some really odd choices within the movie, though. Like I said, he wants it to be 2001. And I'm like, well,
but the material doesn't warrant
it. No, like it should. There is grittiness too when you're watching the sport, but everything's so maudlin and introspective when you're watching it. At no point does Caan, you never see him really yell or react in extreme ways when, you know, except for some emotion when he thinks about Ella.
Which I think is sort of why she's actually more highly in the listing of the cast, is because her character is a very big thing that hangs over the whole film. Narration,
right?
Sure. I think he's just going through the motions. And a lot of the theme about that is the sport isn't really, it's not a sport, legitimate
it's
sport.
It's a distraction.
It's a distraction for society. This is a corporate-driven world. In the far-flung future of right now, of 2018.
I know, right?
So it's somewhat prescient. But with so many corporate people sitting in the White House right now.
Yeah. Yes. Don't know how they got
But yeah, the sport was meant to distract people. And they were never meant to have a heroic character. And what I find interesting is Houseman, who owns the team, or maybe owns the sport, Bartholomew, he wants Jonathan E to retire from the sport because he's, I think, basically because he's getting too popular and it's counterproductive to what the sport's for. They're going to run a special on him, which also seems to be counterproductive to what they're trying to do. Well, but okay, but if he's getting too big and you guys are trying to make this more violent by killing off people and showing that there is no point to this, you're never going to succeed, and it's just a death sentence playing this mm-hmm. game, why didn't you just off him early instead of plan it later as he's getting wise to this?
Well, I think...
because they didn't want to make him a martyr.
True. Right? And the other point of it, too, is where if you retire him, it makes him in the complicit acceptance of what is best decided by the executive.
Sure.
So he's
playing along. If he quietly retires, he's kind of given up.
Yeah, and everybody is like going, yes, the executives have decided he should retire, so everybody should just do what they're told.
But that would make him the Wayne Gretzky of the sport.
Yeah.
Maybe.
But maybe, he might not be, yeah.
If you
maybe
control,
not as fondly remembered as a martyr would be, and God knows the way the movie ends on a high as he... as he rebels against the authorities.
And if you control all the media, as they've decided, like they've taken all the books and they've annotated, quote unquote, all the books and edited all the books, he can just be edited out and people will forget.
That's true.
Right. And I think that was to keep
him quiet.
Yeah. Yeah, because that's an interesting point you brought up was the fact that the
I guess if they retire him, then they could just kill him off quietly.
Yeah, well, he's not a martyr. Off,
right? No, I think they would have.
Well, possibly.
Well, there was a weird line. I don't know if you guys caught this.
There was something like who
gets him or something like that. And I was like, wow, like because I kept thinking of Get Out at that whole point. I'm like, right. Is there something really weird going on?
And they it sounds like the corporations took his wife from him.
They did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. To keep him under control.
Yeah, but she wasn't held captive so much as given a new career in another country.
No.
She was given to somebody else.
She was given to an executive. Okay. She's an executive's property.
Okay, that would explain the other two women within the movie. That those I kind of like, these are assigned companions.
It's an assignment, which is
really kind of disturbing when you think about it, when they see women as property. Like, they see people as property in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. The executives are the only truly free ones who get to do anything.
Yeah, there's little touches upon that where Jean Reno's Alexis Petrovich the French accent Russian.
I know.
Whatever. But
he might be French Russian.
As they build up who he actually is, like, he's control of men who are in control of other men. You know, there's a mining operation. He doesn't own any of the mine. He doesn't pay mm-hmm. the people in the mine. He owns the people who own the mine. So he doesn't. He's just one of these guys who controls everything.
Yes,
it's Subway. He owns he owns the Subway, but he also owns the franchises of Subway, and they have to play along.
Yep.
But yeah, it's no, a mine.
Yeah. He's indicated that he is the man in power.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. No. And it was a nice reveal, like how powerful he really was, because you thought he was just like this sports figure.
Well, Houseman starts off fairly innocently too.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you're absolutely right.
Get the feeling that the executives around them are the ones putting these wheels in motion, and I felt that way about Houseman and Jean Renault, that it was the other executives trying to force him out. I mean, they mm-hmm. called Houseman the old man.
They did, but
he's
sort of
very.
Seemed...
They're both very aware of what's going on.
They're very aware.
Yeah,
it just takes a while to tip off the audience.
True, but I mean, Houseman. It seemed like he was very much still. People were still very fearful of him. Like when they have that screen conference with all these people, and they have to say yes, and the one guy kind of hesitates and gives this look, and he's like, "Okay, fine."
Yeah, yeah, no, and Houseman. I mean, I understand what you say about Houseman because he mm-hmm. can be a very formal, stiff actor. I mean, you can tell he's classically trained for stage and stuff, right? But in this particular role, I found that disconnect extremely effective, mm-hmm. right? Like, because all he cares about is his corporation. He's completely disconnected from everything else.
Totally agree. Right. It makes more sense.
Yeah. Right. He's almost an automaton because he's got nothing to care about.
Yeah. I felt that everybody's performances were pretty subdued, except for Moon Pie.
Yeah. Yeah. I love Moon Pie.
Yeah. Well, you're supposed to. Yeah. He definitely stands out with everybody's kind of monotone performances. So.
Yeah. And you know what? I think Khan's performance was deliberate.
For sure. Right? We've seen him, what his range actually is and how animated he can be.
I think that his stoicness in this movie was indicative of the type of person. That's what made him successful, is that he's so even keel that no matter what happens, he stays focused on what he needs to get done.
Yeah. Right? And you do see that focus in him trying to dig information, and there's that weird computer library.
Oh, yes,
thing.
The computer
that was pretty,
library.
That was pretty cool, actually. The liquid computer, yeah. and then the computer just doesn't want to play ball.
Well, the whole place itself is quite interesting, but yeah. I found it was kind of like, I was fascinated that he was able to go there, that they kind of let him.
Yeah.
But it was, they're just gleefully saying, oh, yeah, no, we just got rid of the 13th century today.
What? Oh, he lost it.
Yeah, they lost it, but it's like I got the impression they didn't so much lose it as the computer hit it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly it. It's like they're slowly but surely culling out anything that contradicts the edicts of the corporations.
Yeah. You get the feeling the librarian's gone a little batty.
Yeah. I loved him.
He was so much fun to watch, actually.
He was.
He sits on the stairs, has a maudlin conversation. James Caan sits down, he gets right back up. It's so wonderful.
Yeah, it is. He was definitely another phase of comic relief. And what is a pretty dry film for the most mm-hmm. part, right? Aside from the action scenes.
And it's baffling that the movie feels dry, considering the sport itself is... Yes.
But there's so little of the sport in the movie. Most of it are these setup scenes, and they're typical of the mid-70s, longer than they needed to be.
For sure.
And way too many weird arty shots.
Yeah. Right. No, they were definitely... Well, he was trying to make a movie that stand the test of time. Why he put everybody in 70s leisure suits, I have no idea.
Well, that, at the time frame, that was mostly... It was weird. When every 70s movie, you look at them trying to do the future, everybody's in a jumpsuit. That just seemed to be every 70s person, like, oh, eventually everybody will be in a jumpsuit.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh.
A jumpsuit or a robe. I don't know why. This seems to be the every single one.
No, it doesn't stand the test of time. Just saying.
No.
Nice try.
Like, we look at Logan's Run. That's essentially the same look.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, if anything, it feels older than it actually is. Because, I think of Logan's Run and how it sits on a scene and to be more introspective, when a lot of the conspiracy is kind of just it feels really forced and nonsensical a lot of the time.
Yeah. Well, I just wish they'd sort of dug into more. I thought there was going to be a whole big thing on what quote unquote retirement meant.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was really waiting to find out what that was.
Yeah. And I think we would know what retirement is versus what the company thinks and what the player might think.
Yeah. But yeah. I would love to see how that comes to a head.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think it kind of does in the end scene, right, where they're mm-hmm. going to forcibly retire him. Right?
Yeah, I mean, guess. They're making the game more and more violent. By the end, they're not calling the penalties, and they even get rid of the time limit. So it just becomes a hit squad at this point. Mm-hmm. They're taking everybody in
they're
the
doing
team
Death
out.
Race 2000.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and limited substitutions, don't forget, when somebody's taken out, they can't put somebody else in, right?
Yeah, and it gets down to a point where Jonathan's the only one left standing, so he's just... He's very aware. We see him early in the film training some new mm-hmm. players. So he's very aware of the rink and how to move on it and what to listen for, what to look for, and set people up. Ooh. And he's very good at it.
And that's one of the things that's missing from the remake is they sort of moved away from him as a leader and then...
As more as a key player.
And.
And he had to do it because he was shooting for the NHL, but he was getting in trouble doing these the body sled thing we see at the beginning of the movie, the street losing.
But yeah, I think they totally miss it. They make him a key player and like all of this other stuff. But in the original movie, actually, when we're talking about like how James Caan is very restrained, when he's training those players, that's the most animated you see him. That's the most engaged. Yeah. And I was like, I love to see this side of this character. But it also illustrates that he's part of the system.
Yeah.
Yes.
And they don't have that in the remake.
No.
Is kind of necessary because he should be somewhat complicit, and that's part of the struggle he's
having. you get the feeling he's a veteran player. He's leading the way for the next generation of players. This one, he's a showboat taking all the stardom, and he's getting it's a Russian-owned league. And the imported players like him and LL are getting paid really well, but the rest are barely scraping by.
Our property. And that's the one thing they did keep is they're essentially property. They tattooed their fucking faces.
Yeah.
Yep. Right? Without their consent.
With their player numbers. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what they're going to be on this team, and this is their number.
Yeah.
Like, it's just.
Yeah. And then once it's tattooed on your face, that's your number forever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they have the other players too. There's the one guy, the actor Oleg Taktarov, who I thought actually was in the remake. I wrote down, I think he's the best part. He's like subdued, but I found him so engaging.
Yeah, and if anybody wants to know where he's from, he was in Predators and National Treasure.
But yeah, he's got his fans, who are people who worked at the mines, like his family. These people know him and love him.
Yeah, you're right. He is one of the better written characters in the movie. Mm-hmm. He has depth. He has a backstory.
Right. Yeah.
He actually has a backstory.
Yes.
so that makes...
About the only one in the movie that does.
Literally the only one. They don't explain Rebecca Romijn's scar.
No.
She just has one.
Oh, yeah. The scar. I just get on this? I can take a black pen and write on my face. That's not a scar.
Well, that was her request when she did the movie. Yeah, she's like, I want a scar. I want less nudity.
Then she should have demanded a fucking scar.
Instead of what looks like a line drawn on with still stitches in it.
Hey, it's 70 million. I don't know where the money went, but it didn't go into that.
No, you know what it went into? It went into the arena and those costumes, because the costumes were fucking cool.
They were cool as shit. Yeah.
How does she see in that helmet? That's my other
question. Yeah, no, That helmet was awesome. No, when she got some close-ups, you could see
that it was
transparent on the front. It actually was very much like a motorcycle helmet. Yeah.
All right. I just didn't pay attention. I think I tuned out a couple of times.
Understandably.
Yeah.
No, it was actually, you know, for the first 30 minutes of the film is quite good for the most part. It's the last...
It's stupid out of the gate.
Well,
okay. I hated that you didn't need that long drawn out beginning opening.
Oh no, the luge scene could have gone.
The luge scene to get him to go to rollerball because he was in trouble with the cops is weak at best.
Absolutely. I'm sorry.
And that's the only backstory you get of him.
Yes, only backstory.
Right? And then next thing you know, you're flashing to rollerball
4 months later.
4 months later, and he's a big star.
Yeah.
Yeah, now I don't know how much flips and ramps you have in NHL, but that's not his skills don't necessarily translate. I'm sorry.
And I mean, they're trying, the league is trying to expand into North America. That's one of Jean Reno's Alexis's character. One of his primary goals is to expand into the US, which wouldn't have gone well for him anyway, because he would have still had police looking for him, so he wouldn't have been able to go back and play in the U.S.
He
anyway.
Didn't want to expand the sport in the U.S. He wanted to sign a cable deal in the U.S.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right? So he didn't want to operate there. He just wanted his show to broadcast there so he'd get a larger global
But they showed the arenas from different countries, so they probably would have got
one. But can I point out a fundamental problem with his plan? If you're showing people kind of dying doing a sport, you're not going to get that cable deal because snuff isn't going to play in the States.
No.
You're never going to get that cable
deal. Well, they're trying to do orchestrated accidents. They want the audience to think that, yes, this is a dangerous sport. Things can happen. We've even seen people get paralyzed and die in wrestling. Yeah. So, and that's a fixed sport. I mean, these people are very well conditioned, but accidents happen. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what they were trying to do. I mean, to the point where they were even calling it sports entertainment, but like Vince McMahon would.
Yeah. The original amount of accidents that were happening, that could have gotten him that deal. But the level he was increasing it to would have completely fucked that deal.
Even the rest of his executives who were kind of behind the plan, you do it once in a while. But this escalation to an assassination, it became, and then it was just pure hatred at this point because Jonathan Cross was defying him, and even the executives were trying to pull the plug. You see Naveen, who plays Sanjay, run to the phones and pulling the broadcast feeds.
Yeah.
Because it's gone way above.
To protect the
they
investment.
Know for sure.
Yeah, and because he's also the heir apparent to this whole thing.
And he's way smarter than Alexis.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like he's
a businessman.
Very Machiavellian. Yeah. He knows everything that's going on and knows how to manipulate people far better.
Yeah, well, he's basically the one pulling the strings for Alexis. Alexis isn't really doing much.
He's even pulling around the strings.
Oh, yeah, for sure. He's manipulating everybody. Yeah.
What's interesting is, like, colors of the contrast with Alexis, when we're talking about, like, he tells Jonathan the story about he used to be KGB, and then when he got big enough, KGB would cross the street because they don't want to deal with him. So Alexis, he's not as good at getting inside people, because you could tell he's like pandering. He's like, why won't you trust me, blah blah blah, so you know not to trust him.
Yeah,
but Sanjay's
basically
like
a thug.
But Sanjay's very elegant. Would you like some water? Would you do this? Like, he knows how to lure people in.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's why Alexis has him, right? Is he has Sanjay to do the stuff he knows he can't do.
Right.
Not realizing that it could backfire, which it kind of does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I overstate it when I said the first part of the movie is quite good, because the opening scene, completely useless. But the setup of the sport was probably the best part of the movie, is what I was trying to say.
I got to say, well, and John McTiernan was doing that on purpose. He really wanted to accentuate the sport and the violence of the sport, and it's a shame that test audiences didn't react well to the initial one, because if there was going to be anything worth watching in this version of the movie,
it would have been the action.
It would have been the action in the sport, yeah. And the probably over-the-top blood, guts, gore, and nudity would have been probably the only thing that would have been entertaining about the movie.
Well, this was in the early 2000s when everyone was afraid of the R rating, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, and we're just shaking it now.
Yeah.
And it was also a big misstep, like, because we talk about this. You can have as much action as you want, but if you don't have a strong story, people will just frickin' tune out.
Yeah,
for sure.
So, and that's sort of what he ended up doing. McTiernan just ended up, I think he focused too much on the action, and that's where it really falls apart.
Well, the sad thing is there is a story there. It's just, it was really
so sidelined.
Yeah, it was poorly handled. It was really sloppy.
Yeah, and while he's discovering, you're starting to see this orchestrated violence within the sport to get higher ratings. John's starting to notice this, and he's trying to tell some of the more trusted players, his secret girlfriend in Rebecca Romijn's Aurora, is kind of behind him. But LL's just like, shut up and take the money.
Yeah,
you know, if it gets too hot, we'll just leave.
Yeah.
And when things get bad and he sustains a bit of an injury, he's like, it's time to go.
Yeah.
In what is now like the worst scene entire movie. They didn't have enough money to finish it, so we got this nighttime scene.
It was a reshoot.
That was shot twice. Yes, that's right. It was shot twice. And the first time it was shot too dark, and then they tried to do it the second time, and they just didn't have enough money to finish it, so they put it in this night vision green, which makes no sense unless somebody's actually seeing it that way. So you're getting traditional shots in night vision green, which you can't fucking see anything of.
See, and I thought there was a problem with what I was watching. I thought, oh, God,
so
there's
I.
something terribly wrong here.
I had seen the movie once before, and I thought when I was watching it, I'm like, oh, did I get a bad copy? And then the next scene's fine. I'm like, nope, this is fine.
That was
this,
on purpose.
This is actually on purpose. And when I was doing the research, I'm like, this is awful. And Sam's favorite part.
Oh, yeah. Yes, you got a text yesterday.
Wait, before you describe this, how about I run the scene?
How about you do that?
I'll run the scene. I mean, you can't see how terrible it looks, but you'll know it when you hear it, and we'll get right back to it. Okay, there's a lot to digest in this.
Yeah.
The off-road airplane, of course it is. I'll set up the scene here. What's happening in this scene is LL and Marcus Ridley and Jonathan Cross are making a run for the Russian border to get out and then get to the American embassy so they can get home. And they're being pursued by Alexis and his men. And they got planes and jeeps and all sorts of things, and it's a chase sequence
and
that you can
shooters.
And sharpshooters, but you can barely see any of it because it's all in this night vision green and
inexplicably.
Yeah. I'm sure you notice not once, but twice the cartoon springing, of barbed wire being broken as a motorbike goes through it and a plane.
I want them to
like
be
the scene wasn't
every time
bad
we
enough.
Say something stupid, you need to go boing,
boing,
boing.
I wonder if the sound guy just didn't have a grudge against McTiernan. I don't know.
They're like, this is a terrible movie. We need to give somebody a laugh. And I did.
As did I.
Just some sound. Fucker wouldn't let me use a Wilhelm scream. Here we go.
Oh, I mean, this is definitely a canned sound library. I probably own that sound library. If
I think
I dug
we can
deep,
get that anywhere on the internet.
I just did.
No, but I mean, like, just download that sound as a wave.
Oh, for sure. I'm sure you can. I mean, the cartoon schwoing.
Yeah, it's so transparently bad, and it's so... It's even beneath this film.
Right?
It brought it from bad...
It pops you so out. I mean, that whole scene pops you out of the movie, but that in particular, just like, okay, what is happening now?
This is a get up and leave moment.
Yeah, it is. It's like, fuck this movie. I'm out of here. Yeah.
Let's see what else is playing. We'll sneak into another theater. Yeah. That's what should happen.
There's only like 15 minutes left in the movie by this point.
Yeah.
Don't care. Still leave.
Yeah. Spoiler, LL gets sniped trying to make it over this drawbridge.
He successfully makes it over the drawbridge.
And it's a good jump. I mean, he is one of the cyclists in the sport, so if anybody's going to make it, he can make it. Yep. But he wouldn't have been able to make it with two on the bike.
Yeah.
So they're not going to kill Cross. He's too important to the team and to their plans.
Yeah.
Well, if they're going to kill him, they want to do it on screen.
What was it they were saying? Somebody had a theory that LL just had enough. That's why you can't see him die.
Yeah, their explanation for why he's not at the next match is he caught malaria during an archaeological dig.
I love this.
Like, what the fuck? Like, suddenly he's Indiana Jones on his off hours?
Is that any more ridiculous than what we hear daily on the news?
Well, fair enough.
Even the characters are going, really? He's like, I could sell anything.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, even Hayden is like, I cannot believe some of the shit you're handing me. Like, when they first give them Jonathan's new bio about how he's, like, a rodeo champion, he's like, really? He's a rodeo champion now? Like, I love it. Like I said, Hayden's my favorite part because he has
Hayman's
to read this
great.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Right. And his sheer disbelief at everything he watches on this thing. He's like, you can tell, it's like, you can see it in his head. It's like, this is a fucking paycheck? This is a fucking paycheck?
Paul Heyman needs to be in more movies.
Paul Heyman's just sitting there, like, I have booze. I'm getting paid. Okay.
Yeah, no, I think definitely the highlight of the film is Hayden in those brief scenes that he has, because he owns every single scene that he has.
He does, yeah. For sure.
The most believable character in many respects.
Well, it's because he's playing himself. But
Well, let me run the trailer for the remake Rollerball now, and we'll talk some more about it.
You're
going
to subject him to more?
Oh, God, yes. If I had to sit through it, so do you.
But luckily, they don't have to look at it.
That's true. I mean, I'm only subjected
to some of the best parts.
This is only like 2 minutes, so yeah they're going to get the best bits. Yeah.
Wasting your life. Break you need is right here. If you make the team, pow.
It's time to play Rollerball.
It's the world's number one phenomenon. I created a sport that you could thrive in, and three players rule the game.
I told you, it's the promised land.
On three. One, two, three.
Run across leading score.
Gotta catch me first.
Go, go!
Aurora, the Black Widow.
Just get out of my way.
Marcus Ridley, hardcore.
We play, we win.
He's the angriest man in the game.
Woo! Now we will all get big bonuses thanks to Jonathan and to Ridley.
Jonathan, they knew.
What are you talking about?
Here, look. One camera follows the action, and four cameras follow Tova 15 seconds before it happened.
Nothing goes on in this place without you knowing it.
Oof. No.
It was only a matter of time before one of these creeps realized that their take would go up as soon as they got a little blood on the track.
The world's most dangerous game.
Have you thought about the gun?
People disappear all the time.
Will become deadly. And the only chance they have...
What's it gonna be? Us or them?
...is to fight back.
Get out of the car! They're going to kill you!
Grab hold!
Now I know you'll be loving this!
We deal with this on the track ourselves.
This may be getting out of hand. Maybe we should cool the whole thing off.
No. Rollerball.
Let's play the game.
You'll notice in one portion of the trailer, they're like, get out of the car, they're going to kill you. This is the point at which Chris Klein is too dumb to recognize a fucking riot.
Yeah.
Like, this is supposed to be our smart guy who, quote unquote, figures something out.
Yeah, this is the guy who's in a pretty violent sport who doesn't wear all of his padding, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they never explain why he refuses to wear the armadillo either.
Yeah, the armadillo is a spine protector. Yeah, and if he would have said it restricts his movements or something, I would have been fine.
Yeah.
That would have been fine.
An explanation was all we needed. One line.
Yeah, and LL's always trying to get him to put it on. And that comes into play at near the end of the movie when he's basically expecting to get attacked and he decides to wear the armadillo as somebody takes a bladed scoop to the back of his spine. And that saves him.
And then there's that one line. He knew.
He knew.
They're all in
because he wore
this moron.
This moron knew. He knew, but he went on the rink anyway. Yeah.
And there's like a major part of it too, where you talk about like he won't wear the armadillo and all this stuff. Like he's just partway through the film. I'm like, why am I watching this dumbass? Like he's so unlikable. I fucking hated him.
I didn't have the same dislike for him, but
he's such an asshole.
Yeah. But I didn't find him interesting.
No, like, he's not, just like, not very like
I found James Caan in the original. I found him very interesting.
Yeah,
right. I, aside from the some of the drier scenes in that movie, it's a good movie. The performances are excellent. It tells the story.
Mm-hmm.
It has a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Yes.
And it doesn't take us out of the story with weird chase scenes or any weird sleuthing either. I mean, like he's trying to figure out why they want him to retire.
Yeah.
Right. And I like that motivation more because the violence that in the original is not their motivation. It's something that happens because they're trying to take out Jonathan.
Yeah. Right? And it's also just the game.
And it's just exactly.
I think with this cast, if you wanted to make Jonathan more interesting, he's the superstar of the league. He's the highest paid. He's the one who's getting all the glory, the money, the girls, the cars, all of that stuff. If anybody's got the most motivation to kind of stay, his emotional arc to become a better person would have been more interesting. LL's Marcus Ridley, who did the recruiting in the first place, I think should have started noticing the shady stuff. He's the one who's protecting his player and says, put on the armadillo.
Yeah.
And he's got everybody's backs in, for the most part. Yeah. But he's the one who's kind of playing the shallow player. And I think it would have been, well, if he's the one discovering the mystery while the other character's going through a character arc to become a better person along the way through Rebecca Romijn's Aurora, I think the whole movie would have been far more interesting.
Or and, alternatively.
And LL's good. So well, not in this movie, but
no.
But it would have been, to give him more, I think, would have benefited the film.
Or alternatively, you could have it where he is aware of all the corruption in the sport. And the point is, he's there to keep him there. Like, he would be like that mole, that friend, quote-unquote, but not a friend, who keeps him there. Like, that would have been
because
an interesting...
Because they're not at risk.
They're
never going to be the victim.
I got the feeling...
But he also might be paid extra to keep him there.
Yeah, I got the feeling that was originally Cletus's role in Moses Gunn, was what he was supposed to be doing as well, is keeping the characters motivated and trained. As he's kind of like a coach, team manager in a way. And even though he's kind of slyly telling James Caan, Jonathan E., what to do, like where to do the research, he's also saying nothing's going to come of this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to find out anything. And it's right. He never does.
He never does. No. You're absolutely right. And that's the other thing I liked about it is no matter how hard he tries, he never really makes any headway.
No.
Right. It really emphasizes how much control the corporations have over their people.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so it just makes it work.
Yeah.
And it also how the system is so huge. What's really interesting is that even though he's like the biggest player in the sport and like that big moment at the end where they're cheering for him, it's sort of even the revolution that could happen for people supporting him is bigger than him.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
It just happens.
Yeah. And all of that's lost in this remake. All of it. They set it up really well for it to be there, but then there's no follow through.
No, and it makes you wonder if that half hour that was cut out of the film was maybe some of that was there, but I'm guessing a lot of it was in the original script that they didn't wind up shooting.
Yeah.
More than likely, and instead we got that crappy chase scene.
Would love to see that original script.
I would love to see that original script. What happens to Moon Pie in the original where he's basically brain dead after an incident deliberately?
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's the first sign of deliberate violence in the original one, and it's to make a point. It's not to improve ratings. It's to make a point to Jonathan.
Right? Yeah,
That needed to be in the remake instead of this chase scene with LL Marcus getting shot. It should have happened in the arena.
Mm-hmm.
It should have been about the game.
It doesn't even seem to affect Cross. Cross kind of plays into them going, okay, you're right. I have, as you know, as a big key player, you know what? I got some demands of my own. You know, trade Aurora because
he wants her put away.
He doesn't say trade. They trade just because he says to send her away.
Yeah, he wants to get her away from him.
Wander out of the game.
Yeah, to get her out of the game, and they wind up trading her to the opposing team that they're going to be playing next.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And she rarely gets out to play. She actually doesn't play. They pretty much restrain her through most of it. She manages to get out onto a bike long enough to warn him of something he already knew anyway. Yeah. And then they grab her and restrain her again.
Yes.
So that was kind of pointless.
It was very pointless.
There was one... Okay, when you say there are good things in this film, there's one good thing that I like that was the change from the original is at the very end when they realize what's happening... The two opposing teams sort of team up and start attacking the people who are running things. Like, I love that idea.
Yeah, it isn't until, like...
The very end.
Yeah,
very
I mean, end, some yeah. some of the players are the higher hitmen of the teams, right? They're given the bladed scoop or whatever in previous but, matches as more and more team members are kind of getting knocked off the field. But, yeah, instead of... It was a neat play from the original one after Jonathan E., winds up taking out all the men and does the lap with the ball and makes the final score and everybody chants his name. Yeah. This one's kind of similar where he gets the ball. There's one guy left standing on the opposing team who just lets them pass. He's like, fuck this. This is nonsense.
Yeah.
And he gets some speed up, and rather than scoring, he takes that ball and smashes it through the owner's box.
Yeah.
And right into Alexis.
Yeah, oddly satisfying.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, there's more. Alexis gets away. There's a struggle in a lower level with the pool cue thing where he's hidden some guns that are locked up that Naveen that took the key for.
Sanjay had the key
Sanjay
for.
Had the key for.
And there is a great line right there. I'm sorry. It is a great line there where Sanjay's bragging about how you have to have you can't take out the tire without having another one placed. And what do you know what that means? Yeah, I'm not done yet.
Yeah. It's so cheesy, but
it's a total McTiernan line.
Yeah, it was.
It belongs in a McTiernan movie.
Yeah.
And I guess the original one, Sanjay was the one who took out Alexei, and like that was part of the original screenplay, apparently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd like to find a copy of that screenplay online just to see what it should
have
been.
All right, we're going to have to go on a hunt.
I was trying to hunt. I had trouble, so if you guys, you guys might know some people.
Yeah, I know a couple of good script sites. So
cool.
Yeah.
Because I would like to see what this movie was supposed to be versus what it was. As usual, we were hacking on the bad movie because, well, it's a bad movie.
I was kind of hacking on the good one, too, because it's not a great movie.
It's not.
Long, drawn out. I think you're spending a lot
it's
of time
70s.
On the conspiracy and him just making no headway on it. It's just a lot of, like, spinning his wheels.
It could have been shorter. Like, that's why, when I said the remake was only an hour and a half, I'm like, thank God.
Because yeah, I mean...
Two hours was too long.
It has its ridiculous moments. It just doesn't have a lot of that threat outside of the game.
You lose a lot of the tension in the original.
Yeah, why aren't they stopping him from the investigation? Mainly because there's nothing for him to find.
Yeah,
they've gotten rid of everything. Yeah. So I wonder, because it's very 70s where the whole threat is just that just feeling, just that milieu, like just that blasé-ness over all of it where it just seems pointless and gray and bland and that sort of, I think it was a stylistic choice that
in the 70s.
Yeah, very 70s.
Oh, it's definitely 70s. We've covered several films about like that in the 60s and 70s already.
And we have the same complaint about all of them.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
It was just very much in vogue at the time. Yeah. We would do it differently to show the overarching pointlessness of everything in our movies today.
I think it's that tone of controlling the audience and showing the futility of individuality. I think part of the tone does that to the viewer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In a way, you just kind of zombified by the 1 hour mark. And you're like, oh, God, there's another hour to go.
Yeah.
Please play more game.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, like, this is right before we started transitioning into an average runtime of 90 minutes. Because if you look at the 60s and 70s, most movies were pushing the two-hour mark. When they had no business being that long, you're right. Because people's attention spans are getting shorter. But we're starting to see more two-hour movies. Usually they're the Academy Award-nominated ones. It's very rare to see an Academy Award-nominated film, which we'll talk about next week, that is under two hours. This year there's only one exception.
Yeah, even the animated category, most are around 1 hour 45.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But for your average... Go to the movie, popcorn movie, hour 30 to hour 40 is pretty standard, with the exception, of course, the Marvel movies and DC movies, but because they need that
big
spectacle.
Yeah, the big kinetic action fair and sci-fi fair usually will clock in around 2 hours, 220. Honestly, I like Last Jedi was, I think, just a slightly over 2 hours, and I thought it was one of the shorter Star Wars movies.
It
is one of the longer ones, but...
But it's really paced very well, so that's a thing. That's a difference. I know sometimes when I'm in movies and it feels like 2 hours, I'm really pissed off. Mm. But when it's like 2 hours later, I'm like, oh my God, didn't even notice.
Yeah, why is Transformers 2 hours, 20 minutes? Like, oh my God.
A movie that I've never seen and you're never going to make me see.
Oh. Huh? Never going to make you see.
Oh, God.
I'll
oh,
be
no.
working that weekend.
It's okay.
We're going to bring in a guest.
You can torture anybody
else. We're all going to just want to make it the 80s cartoon anyway.
Yes.
Bang, done. I just did the remake.
That. We did.
The pre-make.
The pre-make.
The pre-make.
Yeah, the point I was trying to make is this was very... common, and Trish made it too, is very in vogue.
Yes,
from the late 60s to about the early 80s to really pad out these films.
Yeah.
Right? To make, because I think it was this whole thing about making sure the audience got their money's worth when they were paying $2 to go to the movie theater.
Absolutely.
Now we're paying 15.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I have to admit, at some points when there's movies, I'll be like, oh, am I going to... It's an hour and a half, but is it going to be a good hour and a half? Will I pay that?
Is it worth $5 every half hour?
Mm-hmm.
I admit, I've sometimes watched movies because I'm like, oh, that's 2 hours. That's how much per hour?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you have to think about your value for the money when you're going to the theater, because you can't afford to go to the theater every week or a couple times a week anymore for most people.
Yeah.
Right. So you have to make sure you're getting the best bang for your buck. And I think that's why sites like Rotten Tomatoes and IMDb are so important to audiences, because and that's why things like Justice League, which maybe should have done better in the theaters.
Yeah.
Didn't, because audiences are afraid to spend their money on something that somebody else didn't like.
I mean, that was overestimated too. Like, its box office take would be a success by most people's standards.
Yeah.
But they wanted a $1 billion film, spent $250 million, making it double, sometimes triple that in promotion. That movie was never going to make money, because Marvel, they wanted to be Avengers and to hopefully match Wonder Woman numbers, especially because she was in it. But in the end, Marvel spent a lot of time and care cultivating to get to that point in Avengers. Out of all that lead in to get to Justice League, there's only one worth rewatching.
Now I was about to make that exact same point.
Yeah, and Justice League's fairly decent for all of the problems it had getting made.
For sure.
It's on the right track. It was never going to be a $1 billion movie, and I don't care what executive thought otherwise.
No. And it's also swimming against the current for what DC movies had done prior. People had been gun-shy for going. They're like... I don't think this is a DC movie. I'll go see Marvel.
People want to see more Wonder Woman, but they didn't want to see anything else. Like, I mean, you hadn't really established the Flash or Cyborg yet.
Or
Aquaman.
Yeah.
So you've already established Superman and Batman, and nobody liked them.
Yes.
I mean, granted, I think Affleck, people liked his portrayal of the character, but they didn't like how he was written.
He's not a bad Batman, and I don't think... Henry Cavill is a bad Superman. That script was just bad.
I'm not bad. I'm just written that way.
Yeah, there we go.
Like Rollerball.
They're the Jessica Rabbit of the DC Universe.
No, Rollerball was just
bad.
One
more point, and then we should get back to Rollerball.
Yes, yes.
What they should have done is they should have held on to Justice League, release the Aquaman movie that's coming out this year first, then release Justice League.
Then you'd have two characters. Maybe.
Yeah, and they would have had a lot more time to fix the problems that it had. I mean, you had... two directors on this thing with very clashing styles. Yeah. So,
and
I mean, I don't know who over there thought it was going to work. Trying to force something that happened organically over at Marvel, the Dark Universe is failing, the DC Universe is barely hanging in there. So far, the Godzilla Monsterverse with Kong is off to a decent start, because I don't think they're in a big hurry.
No.
Which is smart.
And that was the same with Marvel.
Yeah, so right? Legendary's kind of figured it out. Yeah. Just don't be in a hurry. Let's get there. I'm a little worried about the next Godzilla movie, because they're throwing in a bunch of monsters in that one. I think Mothra, Ghidorah, and Rodan are all going to be in it.
Yeah.
That could be a little much. But
a little overkill.
But
little
it could
overkill.
Be because like Kong and Godzilla, they seem so different than these superhero movies. Like, they're just different...
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about why the Dark Universe failed and what they should have done in our Mummy episodes. So
for sure.
Go check that out. Maybe they're... Hopefully they're listening, because it sounds like the Dark Universe is dead.
Based on... Yeah.
And it should be based on that first movie. It was god-awful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think there's one that was already in production. I think they're going to push it out. But I don't think they're planning on starting anything new unless something happens.
Yeah, well, I guess that would probably be Bride of Frankenstein, which was baffling because they were going to put that out before introducing Frankenstein.
Yeah. oh, no, I thought Invisible Man was the one that was still in production.
Well,
oh, I don't know.
Yeah, well, I can't remember.
If they want some good ideas, they can just go back and listen to our Abbott and Costello episode.
It's right. Trish and I figured it out.
Yes. We've got ideas, guys. We know how to fix this.
Okay, well, back to Rollerball. When you talk about bad movies, it just makes you want to talk about other ones as well.
Yeah. we do a lot of talking about what could have been better, and sometimes we veer off into other what could have been betters.
Ooh, one other thing. For the original, one of the greatest ideas, like, I missed the font, that bubble number font.
Yes.
That they used. I don't know where that went. I want it back. It's so good.
I'm sure I can find it in a font file for you.
I know. But I just want it in more usage.
It is kind of fun. It's sort of retro computer style font, right? That was the whole idea.
Yeah.
Anyway. And they use it everywhere in that movie. Like, it's not just not just in the Rollerball team, but it's like numbers, floors, and parkades. And
that was what the future of fonts looked like. Yeah. The 2018 fonts of choice.
Yeah. Or maybe that's what's going to happen.
It was the Times New Roman and Serif.
Or maybe that's what's going to happen. We've mentioned it, and 2018 is just starting. So maybe it's a comeback.
Maybe.
Ha ha.
Thing is, I really enjoyed watching the Rollerball sport as sports entertainment as it was. Yeah. Like, I could really watch this. Like, if they didn't go out for, you know, gore and ratings, I'm like, this would be a really fun thing to watch.
Well, the original I kind of like, because I could understand the rules. It seemed like a game. Like, I'm pretty sure there was an offside. Like, it made sense.
Yeah. Yeah, you had your blockers, and if you're paying attention, you could figure out what the roles of these guys were for.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure about the motorbikes, to be honest, what their function was, actually, in the first game, it was there to speed people up, but it didn't seem like they were doing that in the remake, so...
No.
No, and that was partly the arena was at fault for that, because they could only do so much in that, because it was smaller.
Yeah.
Like, it was that track was much smaller than the original.
It was
track.
Too small. If it was bigger, I would have loved to have seen that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Again, with their budget, that's probably all they could afford.
Yeah.
But,
well, I think that was one of the only. They wound up just redressing that for every arena they went to.
Yeah.
But it was one of the only most circular buildings that they could find to build the track in.
I think it was a cycling rink, a cycling track.
But obviously they had space limitations.
Yeah.
But I think that, they kept the bikes because they were in the original. Because, they didn't really serve much of a person. They didn't have the grab bar on the back to sort of pull the skaters along.
They somewhat used it here and there to block and, like, pull people off, but that's pretty much what they were using.
Yeah, I mean, the remake's very superficial in what it does. It's like, okay, well, here's the event. We'll make it a little jazzier. The Rollerball sport, we'll make that jazzier. We'll simplify the conspiracy to make a little more sense and not putting it in a future society. This actually takes place before the original does. I think it's around 2008 or something like that.
Yeah, they didn't jump very far into the future with the remake.
It feels very present, so they couldn't, you know, have corporations running the world.
But it was weird where it is kind of corporations, because, like you say, he's the guy who owns the guys.
Yeah,
yeah.
So that theme is still there, but what's great is it's sort of like hidden. It's not like the overarching world is run by people, but you kind of get the feeling people like Alexei are running.
Yeah, and I would like to see more of that, like seeing that kind of that little reveal earlier in the film, right? Not necessarily to Jonathan but maybe to Marcus, like you were saying, right? Right?
Yes.
Have because Marcus is the inside guy. I think that would have worked really well, and then sort of his conversations with the other owners are these same type of men.
Yes.
Right? That would have made it maybe a little more interesting. And there's one something else I was going to mention about how willing Alexei is to allow his team to be always be the one that sacrifices a member. Of the team, right? There's always his team that's getting.
He's going to run out of players.
Yeah, right. And he makes a reference to me. He says, "Have you got the resumes for the replacement players?" Like he's totally willing to sacrifice his players to get this cable deal.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, it's all about ratings, yeah. and ratings bring in cash through advertising dollar.
But again, okay, so he's bringing in all these replacement players. But again, your team is so bad because they all die. What does that do? You're yes. not the good team.
Well, as long as
Who
he's got,
wants
as long as
to
he's
watch
got Jonathan,
you?
He doesn't care because Jonathan is his draw, right? They even established that at the beginning in that first scene. There is Jonathan is a showboat. He really doesn't play well with the others. He's the one who's winning games for them, right?
Even Aurora's like, well, he's always hogging the ball.
Well, that was part of the cover up too, right? Yeah. The fact they had that secret relationship.
Well, they do.
They're not so secret relationship.
Yeah, but I mean, the point was all these other players will never get paid more because they're just fodder for him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To feed him the ball. Nobody else is allowed to shine other than him.
Yes. Well, it's a team
and they're all
sport.
Replaceable.
Yeah.
It's a team sport and they're like, this is the team. And then here's Jonathan Cross. Like he's the only out of a team sport. He gets his own introduction.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Because they turned that on the ear because in the original, the whole point was Jonathan should never have been bigger than the sport. In this one, Jonathan is the sport.
Yeah.
Right? And that's the first big mistake they make is changing that dynamic because...
Yeah, and like I said, I came up with that solution of where that story should have been. Yeah. That would have helped the film immensely by
Absolutely.
Switching that around to have LL being the one finding out the conspiracy.
Yeah.
Because he's been there a while.
And Cross having the blind eye to it.
Ooh, and I had an idea. Like, I would love a side story of the bartender in that little skybox who knew things and heard things and fed information. I would have loved to have seen that.
That would have been nice, actually.
I think that would have been an amazing thing.
It would have made it more about the conspiracy and less about the really terrible action.
Yeah.
No.
We fix this movie, guys.
That's what we do here.
Can't help it, even if it is a remake.
Yeah.
Well, it's ripe for to do it again. Sometimes you have to stumble along the way to find the right thing. So this is definitely the stumble.
This was unquestionably a stumble.
Yeah.
They started with the first stumble was the casting. Chris Klein was
Absolutely.
Never meant to be an action hero.
And the first one has a good idea, too. And making the allegories to government and corporations and stuff is a strong one. They it's just not executed particularly well. It's still an entertaining film.
Yeah.
But I think there's a balance there to be had that neither one of them
quite achieves. Yeah.
Yeah. One is an overachiever and the other one's is what it is. Calling it an underachiever is actually giving it too much credit.
it would suggest any achievement.
Yes.
We finished the movie. There we go.
Yeah.
It exists now.
Yeah,
it probably shouldn't.
I know. It was interesting. What did you think?
They have good music in it.
They did have good music in it, yeah.
And I have to admit, there were some of the weird sort of gladiator-looking outfits that I found kind of interesting.
Like, yeah, no, I like
The costume design was excellent. I'll give them that. Whoever the costume designer was in that is the only one who ever should have gotten paid.
There was the one guy who looked like a knight, and he's like, whoa, what's up with that guy? It's a good time in a can.
Yeah.
And they just beat the shit out of him. Yes. They're beating on him. And one of the girls grabs him by the bucket head and pulls that damn feather out of the top of it. And
it reminded me of, is it Daedalus and Hercules?
Yes.
Who has the bucket?
I think so, yes. But I love the fact they make fun of these costumes because, they're allowed to personalize them, obviously, and this guy's gone way overboard and they think it's funny.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's somebody who had like three blades. They weren't sharpened, but like three blades on the outside of their head. And I'm like, that's actually kind of a smart move. I would have liked to have seen that come into play at some point.
Yeah.
Never really did. Some of them had great potential, but they got
some studs on their uniforms and whatnot. That's actually in the original.
Yeah.
But they're more uniform in the original.
As for the theme of the original.
Yeah. If you're going for a sports entertainment, I mean, part, more entertainment than sport, then yeah, have the characters stand out.
Yeah, yeah. And they, I think that's part of it is they want the characters to stand out. They want people to engage with the players,
yeah. Right?
Which is the complete antithesis to what the original movie was. Yes.
Although that does make you think that everything's just fixed.
True.
What do you think of wrestling?
Yeah.
But you could have it where the whole theme is it, and where I think part of the original movie should have gone was like, if you're part of it, you're part of the establishment of it. So these people are making good money. Like if you rise up the ranks and you mm-hmm. do really well, then you become part of the problem in the
yeah.
system.
Yeah. I mean, the characters in the remake with their individual looks would have never been able to play that way in the original because you're not supposed to stand out.
Yeah, yeah. But I think that the reason that it works, I'm sorry to say this, but it actually works in the remake is because it allows them the illusion that they have some control over their careers, right, over mm-hmm. what they're doing.
It's about the only
right.
thing. And I mean, that is kind of the point when Jonathan Cross at the end kind of beats down this assassination squad mm-hmm. and does what he does. He's representing the people being controlled by Alexis and all the people he controls.
Yeah.
They work for Alexei. And as they're seeing him rebel against this, the audience is picking up on it as well. And they have to cheer for him because it's there. It's there in the remake. Mm-hmm. It's just, it takes so long because you don't realize that the people going to the show are also people barely eking out a living because of Alexis.
It's two types of control.
They only handle that in like the last few minutes in the movie.
They give you a couple hints. There's one scene.
The scene at the mine.
There's a scene at the mine. There's a scene in the bar.
Which is just before the final moments.
Yeah, but there's also a scene in the bar where the guy who rose up out of the mine invites the guy with the beard and he gets mad at him because he says, I invite you for a night out and you try to pay. He's actually mad at him because he's like, I'm bringing you out. You're not supposed to do that. And that's supposed to be a hint at how poor these miners really are, how hard they work for so little.
Yeah. And like the one guy at the end, like he guts up, he's had enough, goes up over the glass, and he's like, can't you see this is what's happening? Like, blah, blah, blah. And then he gets shot.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which I that actually felt completely wasteful in more ways than one.
Well, that was also when Sanjay starts pulling the plug.
But it sort of, that kind of galvanizes everybody. Yeah. They're already on the edge of starting to riot against this whole group of people, but him getting shot is what pushes it.
Yeah, because he's one of theirs. And I guess it wasn't as wasteful. I liked him so much. I didn't want to see him.
Oh, yeah. I thought I wrote down, I think he's the best part of this movie. Yeah. I loved him.
One of the really big differences that I noticed when I was rewatching this remake is the audience is prompted for Jonathan, right? They say Jonathan, and they've printed on the screen. They're telling him it's time to chant for Jonathan, right? Mm-hmm. In the original, they chant for him because they like him because he is the best player in the league.
Yeah, I mean the original, he was never supposed to shine, so they're not going to perpetuate that
exactly. But yeah, now here the only time where it's spontaneous is at the end of the movie.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Ooh, but I was thinking about this when they're talking about maybe they might have clipped onto one theme in the first one that maybe in the original screenplay is really more clear, but in the remake you really have to look for. Is in the original one they talk about how you keep people in control for comfort. They're like, everybody's comfortable, so as long as they're comfortable, they won't make any sort of waves. Mm-hmm. In the remake, Jonathan is very comfortable. Like he very and his friends. So like, why would he make waves? And that's how you control people. There's two types of control in different ways. Like it's more of the populace in one. And it's like the people who make other people want to behave also comfortable.
Well, Hausman almost says that outright in the original. He says, you're very comfortable out there on your ranch with your horses and...
They take care of them. Yeah.
Right. Like he's not subtle at all about how much Jonathan owes the league and his career.
Yeah, which is why I wanted to find out what happens after retirement.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, why when they offer him retirement, like, it's a vicious game. Why wouldn't you want to?
Yeah.
But
because he loves the game.
Yeah, and that was James Caan's version of the character. He loved the game, and it's all he knows. Like, what would you do after with retirement?
And maybe it could be because in such a uniform society, like, this is the one time I get to be a little different or do something unusual that other people don't get to do. Mm-hmm.
And
it's the only time
you
feel special.
Yeah.
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 Right. And that's ultimately, that's the problem, right? Is that he's not supposed to feel special. He's not supposed to be special.
Yeah.
Right. And then,
absolutely.
Right. And I think you know, the more I talk about the original movie, aside from some of the drawn out non-action portion of the movie, it is quite a good movie. There's a lot there.
It's a well-written script. It's like I said, it's the maudlin approach to it kind of works against the story a little bit, but overall, like, it's decent, and minor tweaking to that script would have made that movie better rather than what kind of ignoring it entirely.
Like they did in this remake. And I have to agree with simplifying
that story and concentrating more on the action just makes it a very derivative piece. Now, when I was watching it, I was thinking, you know, if they had made this now after 8 Fast and the Furious movies, they would have known exactly what points to do it, because it's very music video action-y kind of stuff. Let's get that music going. And the best part of this movie is actually after the first accident, and Jonathan's a little pissed off. He gets his troops and they get in this big circle.
He gets the band going,
and the band's builds up with this tense music, and it's really cool. And you can feel the tension building. Paul Heyman's going, I can feel it. The crowd can feel it.
The remake, as like so many, had potential.
Yeah.
But this is one of the times where blame falls solely on the director. I mean, clearly.
This is clumsy and half-assed at best.
Which is a shame from a director who has directed some really great action films. Mm-hmm. Right?
And now, like I said, $70 million, you don't see it on screen. I mean, that arena is well built because it had to be functional, but I doubt it was $70 million's worth.
No.
Like, come on. Like, where is the money on this? Why couldn't you film the night sequence and have it?
Why is it even there?
Why is it so dark?
Yes, exactly. Why is it even there?
Yes. Like, it makes it just the blatant, let's run.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you take your girlfriend with you?
Well, they say because she has her mother there and she can't leave. Right.
Yeah, they do a good job of justifying their plot holes. I'll give them that.
Yeah. And which I could sort of get, like, maybe her mother's elderly literally can't run. Like, it would be hard to do. It's the zombie apocalypse question.
Yeah, no, it's a shame because, Chris Klein aside, there's a lot of great actors in this remake that are utterly wasted.
Yeah.
Like, completely another. You've got Jean Reno. You have LL Cool J, who's turned out to be a really solid actor. I don't think he'll ever be an Academy Award actor, but he's definitely good for your popcorn movies.
Mm-hmm. You can enjoy him on screen.
Yeah. Rebecca Romijn, I think, I thought
she was actually fairly decent in this.
She was probably one of the more solid performances, given what little she was given to do.
Yeah, because, I mean, at that point, I think, had just done the first X-Men movie.
Yeah.
And they didn't give her any lines. Not really.
No.
So
she was not allowed.
You know, that she was just eye candy at that point, and we've seen where that character's gone since, and I think she's pretty capable actress for the most part. And Naveen Andrews went on to some good things on TV, and I still think he's an underused actor.
Absolutely.
Years later. Yeah. So
yeah, like Sanjay, a couple of times I'm like, show me more Sanjay. I kind of want to see what's going on here.
And
of course Jean, and I think I already said Jean Reno, but
I mean, he was just hot at the time, that late 90s early 2000s. He was in a lot of North American films,
all because of Professional.
Yep.
Yeah, he was supposed to be in French Kiss, but they gave that to Kevin Kline.
Yeah.
It would have been a different movie.
Let's put an American in a French role. Okay.
I know. And you're like going, like, I don't know why. It was also because it wasn't a big draw at that time, but I'm like, but I don't know. I would like to see a French actor play the French part.
Yeah.
Like they did in Addicted to Love. At least they had a French actor play a French man in that one.
There you go.
That makes sense.
There you go.
Yes, and I sadly know about rom-coms too.
Oh, underrated movie. I love that one.
Yeah, me too. It was because it's against type for Meg Ryan.
Recently, Vince McMahon took $100 million worth of his stock, cashed it in to announce that he's going to bring the XFL back to TV. I would rather have him do a rollerball league.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Because he already fucked that up, the football up once.
Yeah, yeah. I don't understand why he's going to do that.
Yeah. So, hey, guys, I want to know, do you want to see more XFL? Would you like to see rollerball as an actual TV thing?
See, now your accent on the rollerball tells you what you want people to say.
XFL, rollerball.
They should even hire you to do the announcing, Jay.
Yes.
I can't maintain that kind of growl for very long.
You just need to do it at the beginning and then just do the, all right.
All right, it's time for rollerball.
Yes.
There we go. That's the one.
That's the one? All right. Yeah. Okay, that's a keeper.
You know what? We're going to cut that out and we're going to put that at the beginning of like every cast for like the next month.
Rollerball.
That's what we're going to call our fantasy casting. We're just going to, are you ready for rollerball?
Yes. There we go. Yeah, exactly. Yes. Well, but I think we need to put that in there for a while.
Or do one with Moneyball because we're trying to really gauge the statistical analysis of our casting.
Okay. Sam, run this on Twitter. XFL, rollerball, or Moneyball.
Nice.
There we go. Okay.
Which would you rather see, a TV series or on television? Yeah.
We'll do it.
Time it when this episode drops. Yes. I think that will be a fun Twitter poll. And that's a good plug for our social media. We are at Invasion Remake on Twitter. We are Invasion of the Remake on Facebook and Instagram. Go search us out. Like those pages. Share it off with your friends. Of course, if you want to contact us directly, it is invasionoftheremake@gmail.com.
Yep.
And do us a favor. Share out the show with your friends. Share it on your social media. If you have friends who aren't listening, tell them where to find us. We are on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, TuneIn Radio, Player FM, Spreaker, Blueberry, and
frickin' YouTube.
Hey, it's like running orchestra.
We're getting it.
Yeah, no, help us get more
earballs
on the show. It's awesome. I got a point. I got like a little wave. If only you guys could see me. But you can't. Maybe one day I'll get Sam to record that on his phone and we'll throw it on the social media.
There we go.
Orchestrating those final moments of the show where we're doing all our plugs and stuff.
Bringing it all together.
So yeah, help us out. And if you take a moment, just drop a 5-star rating and a review over on Apple Podcasts. And that'll also help people find the show who might dig stuff like this. Yeah, you know what? Next week, Oscars.
Yes.
We're going to do our Oscar special. We're going to do our Oscar pool. We're going to run through the categories really quickly, discuss the highs and lows of it. And we're going to be a lot different than the kind of show predictors. We're going to do it from the casual audience views. And there'll be some categories where we're not going to be very well informed, but we have our own rules of how those work too. And we're seldom wrong on that because... Mm-hmm. Our rules kind of work.
You really do.
Yeah, it's kind of frightening how well they work.
It is, because I think we got a strong understanding of Oscar politics at this point.
Exactly. It's sort of, it's one of those things where we just know, it's like, okay, this short contains this, 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 and this. Yeah, that's the most likely to get the one. I think we're doing exactly what some Oscar voters do.
Mm-hmm. I think you're probably right. And you know, when we do the Oscar pool, I always go with the one that I want to win, not the one I think is going to win. Where's the fun in going with anything's going to win. Let's share what we want.
And we're
going to
have our Oscar party drinking rules. I'm going to put Trish in charge of the drinking rules this year.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Because I did it last year and I think I killed a few people. Allegedly. Allegedly. I didn't do it on purpose, so it was just manslaughter.
Okay. Well, then this year's drinking rules will come with a liability waiver.
And always remember, no matter what the rules are, if you're starting to feel like you're going to die, you can stop.
Yes, you can stop.
Please Oscar responsibly.
Oscar responsibly and enjoy your drink.
Yes.
Wait, no, that's backwards. Enjoy the Oscars and drink responsibly. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, there we go.
But you can Oscar responsibly and enjoy your drink. Like, you don't need to slam it just because the rules say so. Just, you know, have fun.
Have fun. Yeah, exactly. Should we put something on the line this year?
Oh.
I will let the winner do the intro to the show for 4 weeks.
Seriously?
They with the title of host.
Yes. He could still win, and it would just change nothing. So
that's
right.
And he did last year.
Yeah,
and I think he did the year before that.
Well, I'm fairly confident.
Well, I
I'll be fine.
Well, after last year, I came close. I got the one that was accidentally announced as the one that was supposed
that's
to
right.
win.
And you got it taken away from you. And I remember being so happy because it was my pick was the actual winner.
Oh, but that's the whole thing. I picked mine, not like Sam's rules. I picked mine cynically. So I was glad that I was wrong.
Yes, her cynicism almost had her win, but nothing that was on the line last year. So
yeah,
yes.
Well,
so if you
it was beautiful.
If you don't hear me after the Oscars... as the first voice of the show, something's gone horribly, horribly wrong.
There's a glitch in the matrix. Something has happened. I don't know. The world has gone horribly wrong. Who knows what could happen?
We may need a title belt at some point.
There we go. I mean, the fact that I don't really care is going to be it's going to be a battle between Trish and Jay anyhow, because I always go with what I want to see win. I'm sentimental that way.
You know, I
there's bragging rights to go along with this, and now, you know,
yeah.
You get the top chair, man.
Jay, how long have you known me? How much ego do I really have about bragging rights?
You get to put me in my place.
I do that in private. Stop that. Stop that. Stop that statement before everybody takes it the wrong way. I don't do that recording. How about that?
Belle, shut up.
No.
Just shut up.
Okay, well, I'm just going to go and say, like, when Sam's talking what he wants to win...
Nobody unbosses me.
I love the idea... Like, I love that optimism and hopefulness, and that's a beautiful thing, and I don't ever want you to lose that. Also because it helps me win.
Yes.
Because my cynicism enjoys that.
All right, well, at least... Trish has got her eye on the prize. Sam will stumble upon it accidentally, if at all.
Yes.
He'll be like, I won, but you can keep doing it because I don't want to.
Pretty much.
For Sam, it's a punishment.
It wouldn't be a punishment, but it wouldn't feel right either, I don't think. Yeah, you never know.
You get the bragging rights. You just get to go, and I'm your host, not Jason, because I won the Oscar pool.
But see, Sam wouldn't do that. He'd be like, and I'm your host, Sam Stepanenko. So, we're watching this movie.
And he'll be like, okay, you suck at it. I'm going to do this.
Yeah, it wouldn't be pushing your face into it. Wait, that's not what I meant. I'm so sorry. That's not what I meant.
On that note, we should probably think about wrapping this up before everybody has their foot in their mouth.
I am so sorry.
I've been Jason.
I'm always Sam.
And this is the reason why I'm in charge.
I definitely continue to be Trish.
Sure does. We are out of here to watch more Rollerball. Jason, 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 Jason. It's going to win the Oscar pool.